Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, October 12th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. And as we get going, I just want to say happy birthday for my little brother, Sam Lincoln. If you happen to see him in Vermont today, please pass on birthday wishes. Maybe he's going to be out in the woods logging. If you happen to run across him. The American League Championship Series started last night. Big question after the Rays closed out the Yankees in a phenomenal Game 5 on Friday night, in which the Rays relied heavily on the three best relievers, Nick Anderson, Peter Fairbanks, and Diego Castillo. How much could that trio contribute just 2 days later as the American League Championship Series started? Well, in the top of the first inning, with Blake Snell on the mound for the Rays, Jose Altuve was at the plate for Houston.
The 2-1 on the way, and a fastball hit high in the air, left field and deep. Margot is back, and forget it. It's gone. Altuve hits one into the third row of seats in left field. His third home run in the postseason already, and the Astros have an early 1-0 lead.
Dan Shulman with that call on ESPN Radio doing this series with my friend Chris Singleton. The Rays tied the game in the bottom of the fourth.
Here's the 1-2, and a fastball swung on and hit into the right center field gap, and hit so well, he hit it out. He humbled himself right into a home run to right center field. Boy, what a good-looking swing that was, and the Rays have tied it at 1.
And they would take the lead the next inning.
So Adames at third, but there are two outs for Zunino. And he swings and lines one into left center, a base hit. Altuve in the shift dove for it, but came up about a foot short. And Zunino with an RBI single to give the Rays a 2-1 lead.
And they had that 2-1 lead with five outs remaining in the game. And Kevin Cash turned to Diego Castillo, who had thrown 29 pitches on Friday night. This is what happened in the top of the eighth.
Castillo very tough on right-handed batters. And the first pitch, a fastball grounded up the middle, met near the bag by Lau, step on second and on to first. One pitch, two outs for Diego Castillo to get out of trouble.
Got that rabbit's foot in his back pocket, that's for sure. Wow. Not a rosin bag, a rabbit's foot.
And just like that, the threat is over and the side is retired.
And Castillo was still on the mound in the ninth inning.
One ball, two strikes the count as Castillo comes set. Pitch on the way, swing and a miss, he got him. Slider down and away, Altuve swings and misses, and the Rays hang on to take game one in the series by a score of 2-1.
Mike Zunino, the terrific Tampa Bay catcher, spoke with reporters after the game. He, of course, got the hit that put the Rays ahead, and he did a great job behind the plate.
Mike, you ever feel spoiled by your defense on full display?
Yeah, it's one of those things that we take pride in, our pitching and our defense. It comes up big for us today, got us out of some jams, and, you know, we work hard on it. It's good for it to show.
Very first pitch in the fifth after a full count in your first at-bat. Was the plan be aggressive early?
Yeah, he had his sinker working. His breaking ball was really sharp. So it was one of those things where, you know, with the guy in scoring position, I was trying to get something up in the zone and was lucky to get a fastball and find a hole even with the shift.
That was Lauren Chahadi of TBS with that interview. Here's Alex Bregman.
I thought our at-bats were awesome today. Just didn't get that one big hit, but, I mean, I was extremely happy with our team's at-bats all day today, and it was very encouraging to see. I mean, I thought the at-bats were awesome. Just didn't get that big hit today. That's baseball. Keep putting up those good at-bats, and I like our chances. They have a great team, great pitching staff. And they made the pitches when they needed to.
Game two of that series will be played this afternoon. Lance McCullers Jr. pitching for Houston against the Rays, Charlie Morton. It'll be a first pitch of 4:07 on TBS. And, of course, on ESPN Radio. Tonight at 8 p.m., game one of the National League Championship Series, Walker Buehler, the Dodgers, facing off against Atlanta's Max Fried. Brian Snitker was asked about Max Fried and what to expect.
He'll be ready to go, and, you know, the last time out is just kind of one of them days. I mean, and I look for Max to go out and be sharp and just do what he can do. So I have every confidence in the world that he'll have a really good game.
Here's Max Fried.
Over the last couple of years, it's just more of I would try to, whether it's do too much or make the perfect pitch or try to just overthrow. I wasn't really putting putting my pitches in the best spot to get outs. And, you know, when you leave the ball over the plate at this level, hitters are really going to make you pay for it. So you make mistakes and you're going to give up some hits and some hard damage. And this year I've tried to just do a better job of executing my pitches and really just putting them in better spots.
The Dodgers' Walker Buehler was asked about his game plan for the Atlanta Braves.
Your game plan no different. You just try and find what you think you can do well against them. But, you know, they got a lot of veteran hitters over there, and then they've got a lot of younger guys that play like veterans. Obviously, you know, Acuna's been here a little while now and what has been like that since he got here. And, you know, a lot of talented players over there, but we have talented players as well. And you know, we trust in our offense as well.
Now, before we get to Tim Kirkchen and Sarah Langs, check out the latest episode of Fantasy Focus Football. Field, Matthew, Stefania, and Daniel recap week 5 of the NFL. Look ahead to week 6. Download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football wherever you get your podcasts. And watch it live weekdays at 10 a.m. streaming on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and the ESPN app.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Seam heads rejoice.
Noodle alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchen on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkchen covers baseball for ESPN. He's doing some baseball tonights during the course of the postseason. You'll see him on SportsCenter. Tim, how you doing?
I'm well, Buster. I just went home for 28 hours. I drove 6 hours, spent 28 hours at home, and drove 6 hours back to Bristol. So it's been a busy weekend, but I'm ready for the next round. Can't wait.
Did you spend any of that time that you were at home on lawn care or some sort of care on your property like that?
Oh, yeah. I did most. That's about all I did when I went home was I can't fix anything. We've been over that. But things that needed to be done, errands that needed to be done, I took care of all of that, pets, everything else, and then left with a relatively clear mind. But I did not mow the lawn when I got back because I didn't have enough time.
Well, I know it'll be waiting for you. You and I both know there'll be a pile of leaves all over the place when by the time you get back. All right, so the Rays win last night, the first game of that series. And, Tim, it felt huge to me from the Tampa Bay perspective that they took that game in particular because of the timing of it. You know, they play Game 5 against the Yankees on Friday night. And talking with, you know, managers with other teams during the day yesterday, one of their big questions was, okay, which of those three really important relievers, you know, Nick Anderson, Fairbanks, Diego Castillo, which of those guys are going to be available? When were they going to be available games 1 and 2? And so the thought among a lot of people I talked with was, you know what, the Astros better catch them early. And they didn't, Tim.
Right, and that was critical. And again, this is the other point, Buster. The Astros have gotten a big hit every single time they needed one in this postseason until last night. They left 10 guys on last night. They went 2-for-8 with runners in scoring position after hitting .333 with runners in scoring position for the rest of the postseason. So this is the other thing the Rays did, is they took that offense and they held it to one run, which is a hard thing to do with the way the Astros have been swinging the bat. But you're right, Buster. Bullpen management is already the most important thing that managers have to do during this postseason. And Kevin Cash, I don't want to say got away with it, but he didn't have to use all his best guys in game one. Diego Castillo took care of things with a 5-out save, which was critical. And now, in theory, they'll be at full force going ahead, moving ahead with already a 1-0 lead. So, yes, I thought it was critical that, A, they won a close game, B, they didn't blow out their bullpen, and C, they slowed down that really good Houston offense.
Yeah, and they did that. Blake Snell started. Tim, I don't think he was that great. Like, I think that this was a great outing for him, because he wasn't that great. His stuff wasn't that great. His command wasn't that great, and yet he held him just to that one run on the Altuve home run.
Right. He threw 105 pitches last night, Buster. And in this day and age, not many people throw that many pitches, and very few pitchers throw that many pitches unless they have spectacular stuff. And he didn't, but he got away with it, meaning he got all the big outs when he needed to. And to save that bullpen with that 105-pitch start, again, gives the Rays a great movement forward on this, that they didn't blow out their bullpen with using 9 guys in game one. They only had to use 5 pitchers in game one. Let's face it, Buster, in this day and age, you get away with only 5 pitchers in a 2-1 game, you're doing okay.
So you're a basketball guy. You love basketball. You played for years. And so this is the comparison that I've been using. Tell me if I'm an idiot or if you like the comparison. The Tampa Bay Rays remind me of the University of Virginia basketball team. They're completely different than just about any other team because of the way their club is structured. The style they play is completely different. And when they get into these kind of games, postseason games, man, they're tough. You know, University of Virginia plays that defense and they got these phenomenal athletes that they recruit. It's like they got a bunch of tight ends running around. And the Rays have a bunch of right-handed guys who are about 7.5 feet tall who throw 98 miles per hour. And in one-run games this season, they're 16-5. And according to the Elias Sports Bureau, that is the best mark in the modern MLB history. These type of scenarios, I feel like, Tim, they are built for them.
Yeah, they've won 74 games in a row now, leading after 8 innings. So that's pretty hard to do in this day and age. And I think your comparison with Virginia basketball is apt, because they're not like that. Virginia team just played defense every day, and that's how they won a national championship. They weren't a great shooting team. The Rays are not a great shooting team. They scored, you know, the 12th most runs in the American League this year, but they always find a way to get the bucket when they need one. And that happened again yesterday, and the way they mix and match with their lineup and the way that, you know, Kevin Cash can put out a great defensive outfield whenever he wants, or he could have a great right hitting hitting lineup or left hand hitting lineup. He's got so many movable pieces there, and their analytics work so well. They're a very dangerous team, but Buster, you're right. It's that bullpen that really sets them apart. As you know, they had 12 guys get a save this year. No team has ever had 12 players with a save, and they did it in a 60-game season. And then Peter Fairbanks got 2 in the postseason. So that's 13 guys that have saved a game this year for the Rays. That's obviously unprecedented.
Randy Arozarena came from the St. Louis Cardinals. Do you think they're watching how he's performing in this postseason and during the 2020 season and have their hands in their heads like, what have we done?
And Buster, let's not forget, he was kind of an afterthought in that deal. Jose Martinez was the big guy in that trade. Didn't go particularly well with the Rays. Then he got traded to the Cubs, and he went 0 for 21 with the Cubs. But the other guy involved in that trade, Arozarena, not only is still in the playoffs, he's hitting third in the playoffs, and he's got four postseason homers. It's like four other rookies ever have hit four postseason home runs, and he's one of them. So, yes, the Cardinals have to be looking at that and say, oh, my gosh, we traded Luke Voit, and now we traded this guy. And he could have – that's one thing they need is an outfielder that can hit the ball out of the ballpark.
So before we talk about the other series that begins today, the National League Championship Series, the Braves and the Dodgers, I want to look back to that Game 5 because that was – Tim, I thought the Game 5 between the Yankees and the Rays was one of the most tense games that I've ever seen. And I was trying to figure out why I felt this way. And by the way, I talked about this with some folks with the Yankees organization, and mournfully they agreed that that game had a special feel to it. And I think the reason why, Tim, is because we're in this era where you have three true outcomes: either you strike out, or you hit a home run, or you walk. And so it felt like watching that game the other night. As each inning's going by, there are no rallies because teams don't really rally when you play the Rays and you have all these strikeouts. You know, you had Gerrit Cole on the mound for the Yankees. You had Aaron Boone going to his two best relievers. That game the other night was so tense. Did you feel that?
Oh, I did, Buster. And the whole three out, true outcome thing was so obvious there. I kept thinking, nobody can hit Gerrit Cole. You can't get a hit off of him. He's too good. But he gave up 14 regular season homers. He gave up 18 home runs this year. Nobody gave up more homers this year than Gerrit Cole, and he might be the best pitcher in the world. But if you make a mistake, someone hits a home run, and that's all I could think of is you can't even be, as a Yankee fan, for instance, you can't be really comfortable knowing Gerrit Cole might give up a homer because that's the way the game works. So I thought the whole time, whoever hits the next home run is going to win it. Somebody's going to have a home run and win the game here. I just didn't know it was going to be Mike Brasso. And that was too good of a story to even root for. Here, an undrafted free agent hits a home run off a guy who almost took his head off. But you're right. That was as tense as it gets. And not just because it was a game five between two division rivals. It's because you knew it could end or be decided right now on one pitch.
And, of course, that came on the 10th pitch of the at-bat for Brasso against Aroldis Chapman. After the game on Friday, he talked about getting karmic revenge.
Like I said before, the revenge aspect is not a thought in my mind. We put that in the past and we moved on and we put it just straight to business. And we came here as a business trip and, we knew that we were probably going to see them this time of year, and you really can't script it any better. The battle that we've had all year with these guys to go to game five and have such an unbelievably well played game, well executed, like I said, you can't script it any better.
Tim, do you believe that?
No. Look, I love that kid for what he's done. Undrafted free agent, fights his way through a minor league system and actually gets to play in the big leagues and does some good things. That was all about revenge. Nobody in the world would not be thinking about nearly getting your head taken off by a pitch. I still can't believe how that Aroldis Chapman pitch did not hit Mike Brasso in the head. I can't believe he got out of the way. So I would have run around the bases the entire time thinking, all right, I showed you. You're going to throw it at my head. I'm going to beat you in the biggest game. So God bless him for not making it about revenge, but that's exactly what it was about, and everyone could see that.
Our friend Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, talked about or answered the question about whether or not he considers this season a failure.
I hate that question every year because there's failures and successes, and no one in that room is a failure. Our goal is to win a world championship. That's what we feel like we're capable of. That's the goal when we set out way back in Tampa in spring and then summer camp, nothing changed. Entering the playoff, nothing changed. We have a team capable, I feel, of being a champion. We haven't gotten there yet. I believe in my heart we will, and we just got to keep grinding away at it.
But I do think, Tim, that this winter is going to be an offseason of change for the Yankees, and not with the core guys, because obviously, they'll move forward with Aaron Judge and with Gleyber Torres. Giancarlo Stanton's on the team. Gerrit Cole's on the team. you know, key relievers they'll wind up keeping. But it does feel like that they need to do something a little different. I'm just was curious about this. I mean, they obviously are going to have to add to their rotation. Domingo Germán's going to come back from his domestic violence protocol suspension. Davey Garcia, I would assume, is going to be part of the rotation next year. Jordan Montgomery. They really like Masahiro Tanaka in terms of being a leader. They're not going to pay him like a number one starter. If he wound up being like a CC Sabathia 1 year re-signing, that wouldn't surprise me. But I think they need one more starter, a Robin to Gerrit Cole's Batman. And we've talked about how they're going to be a lot of potential free agents. I don't think they would pay for someone as expensive as Trevor Bauer, but maybe in the next tier. I think they absolutely have to take a hard look at Gary Sanchez, because it's remarkable to me how he's regressed as a player. The Yankees talk up all the time about how he's better than what people perceive as a defender. I'm just not buying it. And it's been shocking to me how he's regressed as an offensive player. You know, when he was got to the big leagues, I'd hear from people all the time, like, that guy, not only is he a power, but he's actually a good hitter. Well, that's kind of gone away. And I think they have to take a hard look at that. And the other part of this, Tim, I really believe, especially after watching them struggle against those Rays right-handed relievers, they have to get more left-handed. You know, in recent years, they've stacked up this lineup, which is so overwhelmingly right-handed. And, you know, when they play at home and guys like Luke Voit are shooting ball to right center field, it all feels good. But I think in the postseason, when they, need more balance, that's when it's really borne out how right-handed they are. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think Trevor Bauer would really help them, because, of course, he would really help anyone. But I can't imagine paying him and putting him next to Gerrit Cole when you have, you know, pitchers coming back from injuries that should make your rotation good enough. I'm with you. I think a change has to be made now. This is 3 years in a row, and I think it's got to start behind the plate. I'm with you. 2 years ago, I had a guy on their team tell me, Gary Sanchez is the best hitter on our team, and he hasn't been for the last 2 years. And I think, J.T. Realmuto's a free agent. Maybe you just say, all right, we got to go get a catcher in here every day. Maybe he's the guy. George Springer's a free agent, but these are also right-handed hitters, Buster. You're right. I think they are so right-handed, and I think they're still can be pitched to. Aaron Judge can be pitched to, no matter how many home runs he hits and no matter how good Stanton was. You can pitch to him. You can get him out. And I think they need to find another hitter somewhere. And imagine saying the Yankees need to find another hitter. They need to find a left-handed hitter to balance things out.
All right, later today, the Braves and Dodgers start their series. I have felt in recent days, and maybe it was because I had the Braves for our broadcast in the first round, and then have been fascinated to watch them play, and they absolutely destroyed the Marlins. I feel like they've been incredibly underrated in this series, Tim. What do you think? Or do you think the Dodgers absolutely are going to steamroll them?
No, they're not going to steamroll them. I picked the Dodgers to win the series. I think the Dodgers are a better team, but it's really close. So I did the radio call, Buster, on the Braves and Marlins, which means I'm bearing down on every single pitch. That team is better than I thought it was. That bullpen is better than I thought it was. They just bring one power arm after another, or another different look. Darren O'Day slinging it from the side. Left-hander coming straight over the top. A.J. Minter's back to being a good pitcher again. That bullpen is loaded. Their young starting pitching is so good. I mean, we know how good Max Fried is, but that's my first real looking at every pitch that Ian Anderson throws. That's 95 up in the strike zone, and then a changeup at 89 that darts all over the place. And Kyle Wright was really good the game I did also. So I think they have every chance to beat the Dodgers again. I think the Dodgers are better. I think the Dodgers will win, but I think it's a 7-game series. And let's not forget, the Braves haven't really hit this postseason. They haven't gotten hot. They've got just a few guys going, you know, and Dansby Swanson and has carried things along with a few others. But once they really get going, that team led the league in OPS. Travis d'Arnaud, if he stays this hot, they got a chance to beat the Dodgers.
So I did a piece over the weekend after I had a conversation with Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Braves. And the thing that has absolutely jumped out at me, Tim, since Alex took over as the Braves GM, is how patient he's been. And so in this conversation I had with him the other day, I said, you know, where does that come from? And he just began to recite a litany of mistakes that he had made when he first became a general manager with the Blue Jays. And he said, you know, I really learned from my mistakes. He said, when I first took over as a GM, I looked at clubhouse culture as a thing where you check a box by acquiring one or two veterans and you're good. He said that, no, through conversations with guys like Mark DeRosa, he learned that, no, this is something that you really have to foster. And you see the players they've, you know, picked in Atlanta, whether it be someone like Darnell or re-signing Nick Markakis, they've been really attendant to that. He talked about his time with the Dodgers, you know, working with Farhan Zaidi and with Andrew Friedman, who had come from small market teams. He began to understand the value of depth, not just 1 through 25 or, you know, now 1 through 28 on your roster, but 1 through 40. And the other thing, too, is he talked about how he began to understand how you have to do everything you can. And this is what Andrew learned with the Rays and what Farhan learned with the Athletics. You have to do everything you can to help the players get better. And we talked about, you know, Max Fried, who in September of 2018, if someone had written him off as a bust, I don't think that would have been outrageous. You know, he hadn't really, he'd been a former number one pick. He'd been traded to the Braves. He hadn't really performed at the expectations. But then Rick Kranitz, their pitching coach, during the wintertime, they made an adjustment with his delivery, got rid of a pause, used Max's athleticism, and all of a sudden he's one of the best pitchers in the National League. And Kyle Wright, you know, at the beginning of this season, he was struggling. He'd had multiple opportunities to win a spot in the rotation. It didn't really come together. And then he began to work with a performance coach, a sports psychiatrist, the type or psychologist, the type of, you know, thing that John Smoltz did early in his career. And boom, all of a sudden, you know, this first round talent is manifesting. I feel like that team and the way they deal with their players has been so impressive. What's your take?
Well, a couple things. First off, Alex Anthopoulos, as a young man, went to my buddy Mike Toomey, a scout, and said, I want you to teach me how to do this. And he did whatever it took to learn how to scout, learned what to look for, and he learned from one of the best. And now he's learning every single day on this. And the clubhouse culture thing, Buster, look, we spent our lives in clubhouses. It's real and it's important. And we've gotten so far away from it with our analytics today that for Alex to recognize that Nick Markakis on the team is important in the room is absolutely critical. And he's done so many things. And the way they fixed Kyle Wright, for instance, first 19 innings this year, Buster, he had 18 walks. But the last now 4 regular season starts and 1 in the postseason, he's a completely different pitcher. So this is where the teaching of our young players is so important. But getting the right young players, the ones who have character and have a competitive nature, that's half the battle too.
All right, Tim. Well, enjoy the games today. It'll be fun.
Okay, Buster. See you soon.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I was just talking with Tim Kirkjian. And before I get your numbers game and your predictions for what's going to happen in these two league championship series, I want to ask you about Game 5, Yankees and Rays. I was telling Tim that it was remarkable how tense that game was, how it felt like every pitch was a potential crossroad. What were you thinking as you were watching that game?
Absolutely. It was so much like, I don't know, stress in one, 3.5 hour span.
Yeah. I've been watching every game this postseason, as you know. And that was the first time where after the game ended and the postgame ended and I was done with whatever work I was doing, I was so much more exhausted than I've been. Even after the day when we had eight games, even after the day with the 13 innings scoreless through 12 innings game and everything else, it was like, oh my gosh, I was so tense. And it really felt like everything hung on every single pitch, as you're saying.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. All right, Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 64%. So in the history of best of seven series in baseball postseason, the game one winner has gone on to win that series 64% of the time. So that's notable for the Rays right now. It's notable for whoever wins tonight in the NLCS. And with the Rays going up 1-0 now, teams to go up 2-0 if they were to win again today have won 85% of those series. So a chance to really take control there for them.
Number two.
Number two is four. So that's how many home runs Randy Rosarena has hit this postseason. He's been so much fun to watch. One of the best stories to come out of the postseason. I feel like we always get one of these, and it's really, really fun watching him. So the only Rays players with more home runs in a single postseason are B.J. Upton with seven and Evan Longoria with six in 2008. And he has seven extra base hits, which are third most by a Rays player in a single postseason, behind only Evan Longoria again in 08 and B.J. Upton again in 08, who had nine each.
Number one.
Number one is seven. So Walker Buehler has struck out at least seven batters in every outing of his postseason career. And I know seven is a little random. We're not talking about 10, but it's still a lot of strikeouts. We're talking more than five. And it's still pretty notable that he's done that in every single outing of his postseason career. So it's an eight-game streak. It's the second longest such streak in postseason history. And he can tie the record tonight. So Randy Johnson had at least seven strikeouts in nine straight outings from 1997 through 2001 postseasons. It was the streak only ending when he pitched in relief in the 2001 World Series Game 7. And 32% of starts against the Braves in the regular season this year, the starter got to at least seven strikeouts and four of the five so far this postseason.
All right, I'm going to ask you for your predictions in the two series, but I want you to start in the National League, and I'm curious to see if you broke away. If you became, you know, if you're watching the Braves and you're seeing their bullpen advantage over the Dodgers, which I think is absolutely tangible, if you felt like, you know what, I'm going to go with the upset. What do you got in the two series?
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I did not. I have the Dodgers winning. I do have it going seven. The Braves pitching has been outstanding, and not to take away from what they've done at all, but the Reds and, you know, the offense and the Marlins offenses that they've faced so far this postseason are not the Dodgers. And I'm just a little concerned that it may come back to down to earth a little bit. I still think they're going to pitch well. I think it's going to be a really well played series. That's the one that I'm really expecting to be close, but I do have the Dodgers winning, and I picked the Rays to win in the American League, and I'm feeling good about that after last night. I know the Astros had so much momentum, and I think they still do, but ultimately, the Rays were the best team in the American League, and, you know, I do think I picked that as the World Series matchup when we did our post-trade deadline special with Dave, so I like that.
Nice. We'll have to find that sound and erase whatever picks I made along the way, for sure. I got to tell you, it's interesting. You picked the Dodgers in seven. I feel like the longer that the series goes, the more the advantage shifts to the Braves because of the depth of their bullpen.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's a really good point. I do think that the bullpen is going to hurt the Dodgers, at some point in this postseason. I was thinking last week how this feels like the best Dodgers team in so many ways. I know Timmy keeps saying that, and it really feels like it's the best incarnation we've seen of these Dodgers in the last 10 years, 8 years during the division title streak, whatever you want to say. And for them to have such a weakness now with that bullpen, with the fact that you don't know who's going to be coming in to get the save, it's just, you don't want to see it go that way. You know, I want to see them finally break through with this. And it feels like if they were to get eliminated at any point, it's going to be something that happens in the ninth inning or the 10th inning of a game. So I do think that, as you say that, I question myself, and a longer series could favor the Braves.
Yeah, well, when the Dodgers have fallen apart in recent postseasons, you know this, it always seems to happen from the seventh inning on. Like, yeah. The seventh inning has haunted Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers in recent years. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you later in the week.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets. Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for Monday. First up, we got Kayaking Smith. He writes in, Buster, broadcasters and reporters overcame some challenges this year with remote booths and virtual interview rooms, among others. Was there anything about those you enjoyed? Do you think anything sticks around in quote unquote normal years?
Yeah. And speaking of challenges today, our challenges with the microphone, you know, at some point today, we'll probably figure that out. Maybe I should reboot my computer and get the old microphone in there. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it's always tricky. I believe you. You know, we sit down, we record the podcast. I can't hear you this morning. You're like, I have not touched anything since Friday. So we'll have to maybe hop on FaceTime here and examine your setup. But hopefully we'll be back in stride for tomorrow.
Yep, exactly. Was there anything I enjoyed? I tell you what, when I do the Sunday night broadcast, a lot of times, like, for example, we're in Chicago or we're at Dodger Stadium. The game ends and you're sort of beginning to decompress and you know that you have like an hour wait to get out of the place. And this year it's been kind of cool because like Jeff Dufine, our producer, would say, okay, thanks guys. And I'm in a pair of shorts and I do the old John Clayton, pull off my, you know, my my jacket and hang that up. And I just hang out on the couch. That transition nice. Has been fun this year. And I do think that, you know, there's a possibility because we don't know yet when COVID-19, when there's going to be a vaccine. And so I think there's a possibility we'll be doing the same thing next year.
Keep that jacket on a hanger. Next one up, we got PK Steinberg. He writes in, does the winner of the NLCS have home field advantage given that their series is held in the same venue as the World Series? Maybe something little there?
Nah, I don't think so. PK, it's like a 3-hour flight. You know, for the American League team to go to the World Series site. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal.
Last one for today. Portland Maverick at the Battered Bees writes in, Dan Shulman is the ultimate pro. Such a great play-by-play voice. Better than watching, in my opinion. It sounds like he's at the ballpark with his quick call of the action. Get us behind the scenes. How many screens is he watching? What is his secret? What's your scouting report on your friend Dan Shulman, Buster?
Yeah, we got a couple of screens. Like I'm setting up. I'm part of the broadcast, the National League Championship Series broadcast later today, and I'm going to have a couple of Zoom screens that I can work off of. Quick question: I agree about Dan. He is an incredible pro. And by the way, I'll be working with Boog Sciambi, Jess Mendoza in the National League Championship Series. You got Dan and Singy on the American League. Dan has that unbelievable voice, and I want to say it's about 5 years ago when we're working on Sunday Night Baseball together. And I get this note from an E60 producer who said, hey, we need you to retrack, track number 22 or whatever it was, once you get to the ballpark. And it was just before a game on Sunday. And so I sit down to do that, and Dan is standing behind me. And Dan's got his voice, and I've got this, okay? I don't have a voice like Dan. You talk about feeling self-conscious. I was like, Dan, get out of here. I can't do this narration with you in the room, because I'm just going to be mortified about what it sounds like.
That's hilarious. Good stuff, everyone. Enjoy the games today, and please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yeah, it would be like me lifting weights alongside Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? I mean, you just feel totally inadequate for sure when you're doing something like that. All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.